Boom, we're live. Shutting the laptop. I don't need that. You got a flip phone?
I got a flip phone.
I don't need a fucking laptop. No electronics today.
No, I got a flip phone. What a simple guy. You know me a long time. What do I need? I get texts and make a call.
Do you do? Does it like at least give you a full keyboard for text? Or are you doing four presses to get an S?
That's it. So that way, if you text me, I'll give you an answer, but it's going to take a while. And just give you a quick answer. I can't have a conversation like people do.
Some people get ridiculous. Well, what are you up to? What am I up to?
Exactly. That's what I say. You want to talk like a 12-year-old girl? You call me, man. What are we doing? I mean, I'm not a teenager. Call me. You want to talk?
That's what I'm saying. Shit. It's good to see you, brother.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
It's been a long time.
A really long time.
I've known you for a long fucking time, dude. It's interesting to see a friend who was in, you were always in show business because you ran the Riviera, but to go from that to being on The Sopranos, I remember hearing about it and then seeing it, and The Sopranos was my favorite show at the time.
I ran into you, I think, in Little Italy way back when I was living down there, so it had to be early 2000, like that, 99, 2000, 2001.
I just couldn't believe it. It was so weird watching a guy like you all of a sudden was just a friend. All of a sudden you're on my favorite show. It's a strange thing to watch someone who you like who's on a show playing somebody else.
Yeah. Now, you know what the thing is? I can't even say, like, you know, Joe, like, I couldn't even say, well, you know, it was a dream, man. I always wanted to do it because I never wanted to do it. You know, I was like screwing around, you know, and I think Pollock put me in one of his things, and Bruce Baum, and, you know, I was running the club, you know. Used to work the club, right? The Extreme Comedy, remember?
I got bummed out when I heard they were tearing down the Riviera.
A lot of people.
I really got sad.
I wish I could have went back because it was at one time it was good. It was really good. Right?
Is it gone now? Is it completely?
No, they're knocking it down. I think they start this summer. I think they start soon, you know, knocking the thing down.
I saw Dice in the upstairs room like a year and a half ago or so. I went down there. And
they were doing, they started doing shows up there. I think Amy Schumer, and they did Dice and Gilbert and a bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
And that they used to be the female impersonator show.
Yes. Yeah, that guy's still around.
Frank Marino. Yeah. Just keep on going. He keeps on 30 years. Keeps on going.
Pictures of him. They should be arrested for fraud for the fucking pictures they're using. The guy's got to be in his 70s.
And he's in his 50s.
He's 85 years old.
He's 50s.
He's at least 100
years
old. He's
got a house. He's got a house like, I had to film something at his house once, and it's like a mini Liberace house, like that kind of thing. Just what you think it is.
Oh, yeah.
That's what it is.
I'm sure.
You know, and he also would be crazy, like he had a housekeeper, and he would like leave things around on purpose to see if they were cleaning, you know.
Oh,
like,
God.
That guy, one of those guys.
Of course.
He's still going. I think he's at the, I don't know, the Imperial, what's one of
them? Something. One of those
things.
Strange casinos.
He's one of those, but they're still going, and the guy's still playing. The guy that does Tina Turner is older than Tina Turner.
Well, I remember watching that show once. That show I watched once, and Crazy Girls
All right. You know, there was comics used to come in and out of there, stand-ups over the years. Mm-hmm. I remember years ago, they needed a fill-in. I put Sinbad in there.
Really?
In Crazy Girls, because it was upstairs. You know, the shows were around for years, and they all ran simultaneously. It was the three.
Yeah.
You know, hey, we had the comedy club. We had La Cage, Crazy Girls. So it was all, you know.
Yeah, no, I remember. It was the first place I ever worked in Vegas.
Yeah. I did that Extreme Comedy, XXX, right? You came in for the weekend, which was great. Put you in a suite, we do the thing.
I took a photo of my name on the marquee because I was like, look at that, it's my name.
Well, that was great.
I had one of those those cameras that you buy, the disposable ones.
Yeah. Look, a lot of stuff, I started at the Rib 1986.
Whoa.
You know, way back when it was still like, you know, one of the top, you know, still a good hotel.
You mean Mob Run? That's what you're trying to say.
Well, not really. That kind of was gone. But then you had Rickless, who was kind of just a different kind of mobster. You know, he was an Israeli. He started the Junk Bonds. He was
who
nice.
Who is he?
Meshulam Rickless. He was married to Pia Zadora. He owned it when I was there. So they just found a different way to skim the money, you know, through construction or whatever. They weren't bag men. It was just a different.
Right.
Different deal. Like the air conditioners he bought for the new building, they were from Israel. like they didn't have parts in the United States. So like all the air conditioning, you know what I'm saying? It was, they found different ways. But he was good to me. You know, he was good to me, Rickles. And he owned the hotel when I first got there in 86. And Sinatra was, you know, played there in 88, 89, 90.
Wow.
Sinatra was there. You still had Liza Minnelli playing there. You had Milton Berle. Sid Caesar, I mean, it was still guys playing, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. There was a lot of stuff came to it.
So you got to see all those people there.
I saw Sinatra night after night after night.
Wow.
And I just, after I was done work, I would go sit in the back of the room, you know. Sometimes my wife would come, you know.
Wow.
And it was, you know, it was like no big deal after a while, you
That's
know?
Crazy.
I got a tape of him. I got a tape of him on New Year's Eve. I think it's New Year's Eve 89 or 90. The guys, the sound men took it. It was closed circuit. Remember closed circuit?
Yeah.
In the room, just in the room. And they put a VHS in, you know, Betamax, whatever the hell it was. And he's drunk. His toupee is kind of crooked. And Joey Villa, remember Joey Villa?
No.
He was a comic, like a real, you know, like real hacky, thiefy guy. He was in Splash, that show.
Okay.
And so you had Joey Villa open for Pia Zadora, and then Dreesen opened for, Tom Dreesen opened for Sinatra, and he did a show upstairs and downstairs. He was drunk on his ass, Sinatra. And I have a tape of it somewhere. I still have it somewhere. And he says, I don't care. I play upstairs. I play downstairs. If they pay me, I'll sing in a phone booth. He didn't care, you know, at that point, you know.
Wow. This episode is brought to you by Hostage Tape. First of all, what a great name. This is a product that I use, and I started using long before it was an ad. Your sleep game is about to get a whole lot better, kids, because I want to introduce you to Hostage Tape. Put simply, it is tape for your mouth. But you're probably wondering why you should even need that. Well, if you're a mouth breather, if you snore a lot, or if you suffer from sleep apnea, this could make a big difference. This mouth tape can reduce or eliminate snoring and apnea, and at the same time, it'll help filter the air going to your lungs, increase your oxygen uptake, and improve circulation, which will make you feel more energized. It has tons of other benefits, too, like it helps with bad breath, dry mouth, and, of course, better sleep. For you and your partner, don't let bad sleep hold you hostage. Shut your fucking mouth with Hostage Tape. Buy it today and get a special buy two, get one free offer. That's a 90-day supply. Just visit HostageTape.com/Rogan. That's HostageTape.com/Rogan.
How old was he back then?
I don't know. He just turned on. It was like 1990, so...
That was probably the beginning of the end, right? Before
he started losing a little. He had a teleprompter on stage. You know, he was reading you know, he wasn't completely out of it. But, you know, I think he died in 99, if I'm not mistaken. So
he would forget his lyrics?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Was it because he was so hammered? Or was just
No. I just think he was getting older. And I think, to be honest, my opinion, they kept him out there too long, you know?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think whoever the powers may be, I don't know who that was, I think he stayed a little too long there, you know? But, hey, to see him, I saw him in 82 when I got to town in 80. I saw him 1981, 82, 83, in those days at Caesars. I mean, that was something. I saw Sammy Davis, you know?
Wow.
Yeah, I saw all those, you know, Johnny Matz, all those guys that were there. I saw a lot of stuff that people were gone, you know.
Yeah, you like caught the bridge for the last of the
exactly.
Old school of Vegas.
Absolutely. When I moved there, it was 350,000 people.
Whoa.
I was friendly with the casino, the Joe Pesci character,
mm-hmm.
Tony Spilatro, that
right.
was his character. I was friendly with that guy. I was a bouncer. He would come in the club all the time. You know,
wow.
Paul Anka owned the club. He always give me a 20. You know, he was giving me $20 for years. If I was a bartender, he'd send up a 20. He was always a good guy to me. Now, I don't know what he did, what he didn't do. He was good to me. I didn't know the De Niro character. Him, I never knew. He was around, but I didn't know him. But the Pesci character, Tony Spilatro, and he had a guy, Fat Herbie, and I was there. His son got married. I was the bouncer at the wedding to make sure FBI didn't get into the wedding. Swear to God.
They had a bouncer at the wedding.
I was a bouncer. I had a tuxedo. I was a bouncer at the wedding. Make sure nobody that's not on that list doesn't come in.
But they were worried about the FBI at the wedding?
They were worried because at the time there was, you know, a lot of, you know, it was a small town. It was easy. I mean, you know, they were doing whatever they were doing. I mean, I don't know, you know. I mean, I was never privy to any of that, but they were around.
How close was he to the character that Joe Pesci played?
You know, I didn't see the nastiness. Pesci caught the voice and the accent. He has that Chicago thing, yeah. You know. And I only saw him being like a gentleman, you know, to be honest. He had kids, and, I mean, that's all I saw. He was, you know, he had some drinks. He's in the club, but he didn't do anything crazy.
Well, they always exaggerate things for shows and movies anyway.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I would assume. I don't know where they got it from, but,
yeah.
I mean, you know, he was around. He was kind of the boss in town, you know.
In the movie, he got beat to death with a baseball bat? Is that what happened?
Yeah, and I think that did happen. I think in a cornfield, him and his brother.
Oh.
Back in Chicago, yeah. But, you know, there was a small town. There was, everybody knew everybody. It was two clubs, no clubs at all in the casinos. There was no nightclubs.
Really?
No nightclubs. That started in the 90s, I think, at the Rio.
Wow.
No nightclubs. They had two clubs in town. Paul Anker owned one. And then there was another one. Like, I would go to work at 1 in the morning. To 9 in the morning, and I would leave, and the dance floor was packed at 9 o'clock, 9 a.m.
Wow.
And then people would go out from there. It was just a completely different thing, you know. And all the entertainers would come out, you know. Like, I mean, I saw O.J., and Cosby was out all the time, and Rich Little, and whoever was Bob Hope, man. Bob Hope came into to a club. He left the bathroom attendant 30 cents.
30 cents.
I swear to God, a quarter and a
fuck.
Nickel.
That's hilarious that you remember that, though.
Yeah, well, you know, there's certain things. I remember, what's his name? Copperfield gave me $2. He said, hey, if there's any girls, bring them over.
$2.
I swear my hand to God.
Oh, my God.
$2. And he was, you know, he was headlining, but not that famous yet, but
right,
he gave me like $2, $3. He said, hey, you know, any girls, any single girls, bring them this way. And in the meantime, I had guys giving me hundreds, you know.
Right.
It was all dope dealers, you know, back then. It was all crazy, you know.
Did Cosby have the reputation back then?
He didn't have a reputation of doing anything to the girls, but always chasing girls. Always with, yeah, always, always, always.
But he didn't have the reputation of drugging them.
No, no. I didn't know anything about any of that. I also knew that there was a time he didn't tip, you know. There's a lot of these guys don't want to, you know.
Yeah. They,
you know, Scottie Pippen's famous. No Tipping Pippen. That was his nickname.
Yeah, I heard that.
You know. Hoarding Michael Jordan. You know. You know, and the worst of all is Tiger Woods.
What?
He's the absolute worst tipper, and you could ask anyone.
That's disgusting. They, you
know, there was a girl that I knew. She managed a restaurant, and she was friendly with him, and they would go out, you know, not just her and him, you know, like a group, whatever. She said, I couldn't afford to go out with him anymore because I was leaving tips because he would, you know, I was, it's costing me $300-$400 just from cleaning up his mess, like, you know.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Well, how's a guy do that? I don't understand how a guy becomes that,
you know,
famous,
what?
And that rich.
Because I think sometimes, Joe, I think guys think it's a privilege for you to have me in your place.
Wow.
I think it gets to that point. I swear to God.
Crazy.
You know. And listen, when I started making more money, I started taking better care of people. I mean, I was always a good tipper, but come on, man. You know, you're lucky enough to, you know, you've done well. Knock on wood, I've done well. I mean, what the hell? Pay it forward a little bit.
You don't feel it. That's the thing.
Of course not. Absolutely.
If I leave someone $100 at a dinner, you know.
And you made their night.
Yeah.
You know, they go home and they, Joe Rogan, you know, he took good care of me. You made this guy's night. This guy's probably got two kids or whatever. You know what I mean?
You know what I like to do? I like to do it and get the fuck out of there before they realize it.
Yeah.
I call it like leaving a love bomb.
I agree with you.
Just leave a bomb, get out of the room.
I agree with you, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know. Some people, I think, and it happens a lot. You hear it all the time. A lot of athletes, especially, you know.
Yeah, well, the ego that's involved in being an athlete sometimes, like the, you know, I'm the man, I can't be stopped, I'm, you know, fuck everybody else,
I
fuck
agree
the world.
With you. I agree with
it,
you.
It sort of breeds it.
But there's,
know?
Fame, like, if you go, like, dealers in Vegas, especially, because everybody comes through there, there's, like, I think it was Affleck when he was dating J-Lo. My buddy was a crap dealer. And he left them $5,000, and she picked up 45, you know, in chips, and mm-hmm. She picked it all up at 500 and left 500. He left the 5,000 tip. she picked it up. I'm like,
what a cunt.
Yeah, absolutely.
What a cunt. She stole. She's a fucking thief.
Well, you know, well, no, he knew she did it, but she went, you don't leave it that much.
Oh,
know?
Fuck.
Yeah, but you know, you see it all the time. All the time. J-Lo. You know? J-Lo, I remember that? Guys that tipped me years ago, like way back when. Tony Danza, who I'm friends with, I gave me $20. Like in 1981, he gave me a 20.
But that's like a big part of like the whole culture of Vegas is tipping.
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. Know,
it always has been.
And the thing is, if you want to get treated right, you need to tip.
Yeah.
That's it. Because it doesn't even take that much, Joe. No. But guys don't understand. They're waiting online for 3 hours, like at the right. buffet. I mean, why don't you just give the guy $20, $10, and you get in the line right now?
Well, what I understand is a guy like Tiger Woods, like, he's not going to feel $100.
No, you know? But
if
I think
he gives a bartender $100, that won't...
But that's a character flaw, man. That's a character flaw that you just don't want to share. I mean, that's it. You don't. They don't deserve it.
Yeah.
You know, that's what that's all about.
It's just so crazy to me. I just don't understand it.
Plus, if I want to get treated good, it doesn't matter who you are. You could be a plumber from Encino and throw a few bucks around and you're going to get treated like a king for the night. You know? What's it take?
Well, that's what that whole town is about. Or at least it wasn't.
That's what it was
time.
Built on. They kind of took that away because a lot of people, and it started with Steve Wynn, a lot of people, he was a big one. He thought they were making too much money. The dealers, the waitresses, the captains in the showroom. I got a 90-year-old friend was a captain in the showroom during Elvis at the Hilton. He was making $800 a night cash in the 70s.
Whoa.
A lot of money.
That's and what Vegas, is that now? That's probably like $8,000.
And Vegas, at the time, it still doesn't cost much to live in Vegas. But then it cost nothing. So these guys were buying land and they were investing and going out at night. And it was trickling down money. Yeah. Well, Wynn stopped all that. So he's the first guy to do the numbered seating.
What did he, I don't understand. What
well,
did he
did the summer. He got rid of all those captains, maitre d's, waitresses, you know.
He got
the
rid
old
of
days.
Them?
Well, he got they no longer. When you have a show in Vegas, you have a numbered ticket to get in, right? Those people know where they're going.
Okay.
All right. It didn't used to be that way. You used to buy, you know, you're going to go in, and then you tip the maitre d', $20, $30, $40, and you get a good seat. That's what Vegas was built on for years and years and years.
Right.
He stopped all that. Same thing with a dealer. He didn't want them to make as much, so they put it on the check now. They all pool, no matter whether you work hard or not. So when you go out to a blackjack game, and you got a dealer that's a prick, and you say, this bitch, I'm not going to give her anything, you don't tip her. And then there's a nice guy, and you say, you know what, he's a lot of fun, I'm going to give him $100. Well, at the end of the night, that all goes into a big pool. 24 hours a day, every dealer splits the money.
That sounds ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. So some guys are slackers, and they go, hey, man, I ain't got out. I'm just going to go be a mechanic. You know, I'm just going to be a robot and do what I do.
And no personality and lose all the flair.
That's exactly right.
That's so crazy.
Yeah. So that whole—
Why did Steve Wynn decide to do that?
Because I think he thought people— tipping big, making too much money, money that could have been, instead of tipping, he'll make the money. You know, instead of me giving a maitre d' $100 for a good seat, I'm just going to charge them $100 for a seat, and I'm going to get the money. And that's how it is now. You know how expensive tickets are in Vegas?
Oh, that's awful.
A comedy club in Vegas costs like $60 or something.
Does it really? Like the Brad Garrett Club?
Yeah, I think it's like $60.
That's a nice little club.
Yeah, and it's done well. It's him and the Laugh Factory now are the big ones. The Riv went away. The Improv, I just read, is going away in May.
Is it?
They've been there a long time.
The Laugh Factory, Dice is doing a residency.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he's doing like a temporary residency. He's got it like blocked off, some dates blocked
off.
He'll
do well. He'll do well.
He's doing well. Yeah.
He'll do well.
Well, he's got that new Showtime show now.
Yeah. He had called me. He wanted me to read for a role there, which I would have loved to because I think he's funny and he's good.
You would have been great on that.
He's a good actor. I always thought he was a really good actor from way back from Crime Story. Remember that?
I do remember that. Did you ever see that Woody Allen movie that
you
did? Yeah. Blue Jasmine?
Absolutely.
He was excellent in that movie. It was a really good actor.
He's a good actor. He's done other stuff, too, you know, before that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it just finally, after all the other stuff, they recognized it. But,
yeah.
And I think his show's funny.
It is funny. Well, and so is Natasha, his wife on the show.
Yeah.
She's fucking hilarious.
I saw Kevin Corrigan the other night in New York.
Oh, yeah?
Kevin plays his sidekick there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw him the other night. I ran into him.
Well, Dice took a lot of shit for a long time, and now it's finally coming around. It's cool to like Dice again, you know?
Yeah, I guess. Why it went so bad in the first place, I don't
know. It was MTV and political correctness, and it was just a different time. You know, back then, like, they were trying to get away with that. They were trying to move away from that kind of humor that he was doing.
Yeah, but who's, you know, the thing is, which, you know, like, you're a comedian. Who's to say who could say what on stage and what's funny and what's not funny? And we could go round and round and I can't make a joke about this. Well, that's what the whole thing's about. Do you know a guy like Buddy Hackett and those old comics that used to do Polish jokes and Chinese jokes and Japanese jokes? They couldn't even work now.
No, that's out of the picture.
You know those guys used to do the accents and all that nonsense and,
You can still make fun of white people.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
If you're a black guy, you can make fun of white people.
Absolutely.
That's totally acceptable.
And you can't make fun of black people.
No.
No.
Even light-skinned black people have a hard time making fun of black people.
Oh,
you gotta
really?
Be very careful.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't get all that, but that's swung so far. Joe, sometimes, and I'm not a political guy, I think that it's so broken in the country, it can't be fixed.
Well, you know what it is, I think, is more people have opinions now. More people can express their opinions now. It's just a different world, whereas there's so much coming at you from so many different angles. And then people realize they can express their opinions. So many people realize that if they say something on Facebook, it'll get a bunch of likes. Or if they say something on Twitter.
Yeah, but it's easy to do that stuff anonymous. A lot of people
are
anonymous.
They don't want to. They don't want to, though. A lot of people don't want to do it anonymous.
But they do it anonymous.
There's that, too.
I mean, there's the people that could just, you know, motherfuck you from now until forever, and you don't even know who the guy is.
That's true. But when they see it, they still know they did it. So that's why they're doing it. They're doing it to get attention, even if the attention doesn't directly come to them in their, you know, as Steve Sciarippa, name. It doesn't come at their name. It's still, they know that fuckface 69, the Twitter profile, they know they made that. And so when they're saying something nasty about you, they know that they're the one that wrote it. And then if you respond,
maybe they tell their friend, you know.
Yeah, there's just people just, it's a new thing. It's a new thing to be able to reach out to people. It's a new thing to be able to protest people, to comment on people, and to be able to organize things like very easily. Like if a comedian, like any comedian, you know, if they say something that someone thinks crosses a line, they can organize a boycott. They want to get them kicked off a television
Absolutely.
Show.
Absolutely. I mean, it happens over and over and over. They're keeping these guys from working.
Yeah.
Keeping these guys from working. For what?
Well, because they're disgusting.
Well, the Curt Schilling, the announcer for ESPN, didn't he just get fired because he doesn't believe the transgender bathroom thing?
Was that what he got fired for?
He got fired for that, and he kept on talking about it.
Well, you know what? He had a picture that he put on Twitter that showed a guy in a dress with his tits hanging out that said, under this new law, this guy could share a bathroom with your daughter.
Yeah. So you get fired for that?
Well, here's the deal. Whoops. Here's the deal. That is possible. And someone not admitting that doesn't help anybody. I mean, it just doesn't. It doesn't help a goddamn thing.
Yeah.
That is possible. Like, you could get a fucking nutbag who wears a dress and wants to whip his cock out in front of women and says he's a woman.
Yeah.
That is a real thing. Like, I'm not saying that it should.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying that that's the majority, but we got to define what's a woman and what's not a woman.
Yeah.
If you're going to allow transgender people to transition and become the other gender, whether it's woman to male to female, we gotta make some sort of a standard where we know that that's exactly what's going on, and it's not just someone who's a crazy fuck who wants to wear a dress.
But how do you do that?
That's a good question.
How do you do that?
Well, that's why the idea of making people go to a bathroom that is their gender, what they're born with, like their sex, like what's their chromosomes, it's not preposterous. And everybody's making it seem like it's bigoted to force people to use a bathroom that matches their chromosomes. And that's kind of crazy, you know? And it's not saying that you should discriminate against transgender people or people who feel like they were born in the wrong sex. No, not at all. Maybe we need to have three fucking bathrooms.
Yeah.
Maybe we need to have three bathrooms.
That's probably the easy way.
Maybe it should be male, female, and go for it.
Do you remember in Crazy Girls, I don't know if you remember, the girl that was the MC... Excuse me, Jonna Steele. She was a, I don't know.
She used to be a girl.
She got a buzzard chopped off,
yes.
Whatever that is.
I do remember because we met her.
Yeah, she was
Joey
fine.
Diaz and I met her, and she showed it to Joey, and Joey said it looked like a bat with its mouth open.
Oh, that's hilarious. That's hilarious. But she was, you know, I was friendly with her. She was great. She had the mind of a guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? She went with a lot of different guys, and she was very funny.
She was very funny.
Very funny.
And she looked a lot like a woman.
Absolutely. I don't know if I would have known, you know what I'm saying?
And this is 19, what was it? 97 or something like that?
Oh, even before that. Yeah.
But the bottom line about that kind of stuff is you're not allowed to even talk about it. If you talk about it, you're a bigot. Like, we have to leave open the possibility that there's some crazy fucks out there. There's some guys that would just decide that all they have to do to hang in a woman's room is dress like a woman. That doesn't mean that there aren't real transgenders. Like, what was her name? Jonah?
Jonah.
Jonah. Her going into a woman's bathroom?
Yeah, absolutely.
Fuck, absolutely. Yeah. 100%. But what about Joey Diaz? What if Joey Diaz put on a fucking dress? I'm not joking around. I mean, that is entirely possible. There's a guy that said that he identifies with being a 6-year-old girl. He's a 52-year-old man. He dresses up like a girl. He's got parents. He's got a daughter. He's got a family, and he identifies with being a 6-year-old girl. I mean, when do you stop that? Like, is everybody just allowed to play make-believe?
Because I understand,
Steve. I think I'm a wolf. I identify with being a wolf. I'm going to wear wolf skin everywhere, and I'm going to lift my leg to piss on fire hydrants, just like a dog.
That's what I'm saying. I think it's so everything's so broken, Joe.
It's crazy.
It can't be fixed. I think George Carlin.
Look at this guy. Meet the 52-year-old father who identifies as a 6-year-old girl.
Oh, God.
This is not a joke. I mean, people are out of their fucking minds. And the thing is, I can't deny I was married. I can't deny I have children, he says. Well, then you're a fucking father. Whatever happened to loving yourself? Whatever happened to that? I mean, wasn't that something that was preached for the longest time? Love yourself for who you are. Don't try to change yourself. Don't look to get your fucking chin shaved down eyebrows raised and your nose shaved off.
But everybody does
off
that. I mean, this the whole plastic surgery world now.
Right. True. True.
You know, plastic surgery world. At some point, a lot of these girls are going to look exactly the same. Because you see some of them now, just regular girls. Don't you see them?
Listen, there's a lot of old ladies in my neighborhood that are fucking monster faces, what I call them. They get that rubber face.
Absolutely.
You know when they shoot the fillers in there and the whole face swells up and it looks like a monster? It's this.
They look alike.
Immobile kabuki mask.
The thing is this, you know, how do you look and you look yourself in the mirror and you go, you know.
It's dysmorphia.
This looks pretty good. Hey, listen, how many actresses have ruined their careers because they changed their face?
Oh, quite a few.
Yeah.
Quite a few. Well, I think the problem is they think that they look different than they look, you know, and they
think so?
That it's going to work. They think it's going to work, and then everybody else sees them, and then they see what everybody else sees, and they go, oh, my God, what have I done?
Yeah, Jesus, you know? Christ.
It's dysmorphia. It's the same thing anorexics have. It's the same thing bodybuilders have where they think that they look normal and they're fucking gigantic. They think they're too small. You know, it's body dysmorphia. That's what it is. People are crazy.
I don't have to worry about that, Joe.
You're all right, dude. You've always been fine.
It is what it is. It ain't gonna. It is. Here we go.
But that attitude of it is what it is really what we should all have.
I mean, well, that's how. Look, when I was younger, I was in better shape. You know, I played ball. I was an athlete in college. I gained weight. You know, I got laid as much as I wanted for when I was young and in Vegas and all that. And then I gain weight. I try to watch, but what it is, I'm not going to change the way I look. Like, I'm going to be a leading man. It is what it is. That's it.
Yeah.
Girl says you want makeup, doing a show. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah. You know? It's just the idea of you being better looking because you're less shiny.
You know,
it's always been bizarre.
It is what it is. I'm not an anchor man. They have a lot of makeup, you know. You ever do a talk show and you're looking at the guy, you're going, can't believe how much makeup this guy's
fucking
wearing.
Oh, they cake it on.
You know?
Yeah. There's a lot of those shows where they literally change what they look like. Like, if you look at them in real life, you look...
Yeah, they tell you, you know...
Well, HDTV fucked a lot of that up for
those
guys.
Absolutely. Well, a lot spooky. Of people. I mean, yeah. You know, even myself, I can't. I don't like to watch myself. I'm doing Blue Bloods now. I'm looking at myself and going, my head... I just got a big screen, 65-inch, and my head's fucking giant. It's filling up the whole 65 inches.
What is Blue Bloods?
Blue Bloods is CBS. It's a one-hour drama, Tom Selleck. Donnie Wahlberg.
Oh, you're working with Tom Selleck.
Yeah, and I started in October. It's a really good show. It's next to there's two shows left. Friday night, I got a big one. I joined in October. It's a really good show, and I play a DA investigator. So I'm on the other side of the law, you know.
Oh, nice.
And it's really good. The writing's really good. You'll be surprised. It's a network show, and it's really, really good. It's been, they just got picked up for a seventh season.
What's Tom Selleck like?
You know, I met him twice. I didn't work with him because I'm working with Bridget Moynihan mostly. It was very nice. Came
She's
into
great,
the trailer.
Too.
She's great. Great. He came into the trailer. He said, "You're doing great work. Thanks for being here." I shook my hand a few times, and I haven't seen him.
So you don't have scenes
kinda,
together?
No, because it's kind of the way it's worked so far is, you know, I worked with Donnie Wahlberg once, who was a great guy, and then I work with her all the time. I haven't worked with anyone else, you know, the other guest stars, but it's been good, you know. It was shooting in New York, all over the city, so it's like the city's like another character, you know. It's shooting every borough.
So you living in New York now?
I live in New York. I live downtown. Yeah, I've been there. I sold my house in Vegas a few years ago, but I've been there with my family since about 2002.
Do you like it?
Yeah, I like it.
Not too crazy?
It's a little crazy. It's got the Blasio's a piece of garbage. You know, he's a bad guy. Just a bad guy. Yeah, and he put the city in the toilet, and there's a lot of homeless.
But he got rid of the Big Gulp.
That's to the other extreme. Nah, this guy's a jackass. I mean, this guy wanted to separate the city between the cops, and he did it. He's a bad guy, this guy. You know, just and now he's under investigation.
For what?
For campaign fraud and all kinds of shit. The FBI came in. So I like it. It's crazy, but it's great. There's always something going on. It's vibrant. I like Southern California. You know, I'm looking, you know, rent a place here, too, also, but I like it. I like New York. You know, I got my friends are there. I'm from there. You know, it's not. It's insane. There's, you know, you've been spent time there. Yeah. It's crazy people.
Yeah, I looked at a place there for a while ago, like maybe 2-3 years ago. I thought about it. I just had a wild hair across
my ass.
Listen,
my kids were born there. You know, both of my daughters grew up there. I mean, right. My kids were born in Vegas, but they grew up there in New York. And my wife was born in Vegas, and she loves it there.
It's, you know? I mean, if you've got some money, it's not the worst place in the world to live.
You
and
gotta
it's
have
interesting.
Money. Yeah. You gotta have money because it's ridiculously expensive.
Well, it's changed too. It's become like bankers. Like a buddy of mine was talking about it, that it used to be Judah. You know Judah Freelander?
Yeah, yeah.
Judah was saying that it used to be like a lot of artists, but now
this is the problem. It's in 20 years when like the rent control shit expires and you're going to have to be wealthy to live in Manhattan. You're going to have to be literally wealthy. So all the kids that want to become comics and artists and actors and dancers and they get out of high school and college can't afford to live there unless they have rich parents or parents that could help them. They can't afford. So they're living in Bed-Stuy and other neighborhoods, which it's good for the neighborhoods because they're changing, but they're living 4 and 5 to a two-bedroom apartment.
Yeah, a buddy of mine got a place in Bed-Stuy because he was working for a production company in New York.
You can't do it any other way.
He said they started cleaning the house up, and they found out that all that paint in the house was lead.
Yeah.
And he had a kid. He's like, we got to get the fuck out of here. Like, this place has toxic paint.
So, you know, you got to go further out to Queens, further out to Brooklyn, you know, where it's still affordable, but, you know, it's an hour into the city.
Fuck that.
You know, by train. But if you could... Look, I live in Manhattan. I bought a condo years ago, a 3-bedroom. You know, I got a nice place. If you could afford it, it's great. But at some point, if it doesn't stop, places are out of business, stores. The guy had a business for 30 years. The lease is up. He's gone.
Yeah.
You know, it's just everyone's a greedy pig, you know.
Well, it's just the whole landscape of the city is changing. And when I talk to comics, they say the audiences are changing, too. It's like you're dealing with like Wall Street people, or like you're
I don't know, you know.
I
haven't been to a comedy club in quite a while. I don't know that. You know, I mean, you got what, Caroline's and Gotham.
Well, Caroline's is really a tourist trap,
and you got Gotham.
I mean, it's a great club. I mean,
yeah.
It still has great acts, but it's not like they don't do like it's not like a big local scene. You know, you've got like the Stand is like a big local scene. The Cellar, you know, you've got a lot of clubs where comics work out at. But Caroline's is more of like someone's out of town. They go in there and they do a weekend there and headline.
Yeah, well, it's right in Times Square.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
So, you know, I haven't. You know, I'm not privy to that. You know, but it's you can't. Those kids that want to be an actor, you better have a rich mother and father.
When I lived there, I lived in New Rochelle because I couldn't afford to park my car, and I needed a car for road gigs.
Yeah.
But it was not, I mean, it was ridiculous back then. It was expensive.
When did you live there?
I think I moved there in 91 or 92, somewhere around there. And I lived there. I lived in New Rochelle. I kept an apartment there for 3 years. So 90 to about 90, somewhere around 95-ish.
Probably that apartment's worth it's double now.
I don't know. It was a small little shitty place in a weird neighborhood.
You know. It's just gotten way out of control. And these landlords, and I tell you, that de Blasio's really split the city. I mean, I'm not just saying, I don't get into politics. Mm-hmm. I don't know that. I think that was his intention. You know, he's big friends with Al Sharpton. Al Sharpton, sometimes I wonder if this guy's running the city.
Well, what do you think a guy like that does? Why do they do that? Do they do it? Is it a political calculation? Like they think, like, this is the way to get the black vote?
Oh,
the
absolutely.
White people are just going to go along with
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. And let me tell you another thing. A guy like Al Sharpton, he makes his money by shaking people down.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a friend of mine who's a builder there who I could tell you flat out over the years he's given them envelopes. Because you know what they do is they come, they'll say, you know what? We got the coalition here. We're going to shut down, you know, going to shut your job down unless you hire 10 guys. And I'm not even saying black, white, Spanish. I'm not even saying what it is. This is what these guys do. And either you hire the 10 guys or they get an envelope. And this is what goes on. This is what goes on.
Well, Jesse Jackson's been accused of that forever.
Hey, Jesse Jackson, and this is a fact, in Vegas in the 80s, the Frontier was on strike for like 6 or 7 years from the food and beverage, you know, the waiters and the bartenders. They paid him $25,000 to march with them down the strip. They closed the strip down. $25,000.
Wow.
People are coming up to Jesse Jackson going, hey, you know, that's great. Thank you, man. Thank you. Thank you. You know, and in the meantime, he got paid.
Yeah, well, that was his hustle. I mean, the Rainbow Coalition, they'd come in and
the
give
whole thing
diversity lessons to everybody that worked there. You know, they would have these clinics where they would teach people how to be more diverse.
This is what's Al Sharpton done? He owes taxes. He owes this.
Yeah.
He owes that.
He's a hustler.
Couldn't be a bigger hustler. I think he could kill somebody in broad daylight. He'll get away somehow.
He walked in front of the Comedy Store one night. He was walking down the street, walking right in front of the Comedy Store, and me and a bunch of other comedians just started heckling him as he was walking by.
And did he say anything?
Al Sharpton, get that money. Go get that money, Al.
He loved it. He probably liked that.
He's a hustler. We ain't mad at you. Go get that money.
I mean, he's been in the White House how many times, this guy?
So many times.
I mean, the guy in the White House.
Well, not only that, if you go back to his history, there's no white guy would have ever gotten away with that. What he did was he got into the public's eye because of a false rape accusation.
Absolutely. Tawana. Totally
made up story.
Tawana. Yeah. And he's never admitted to that.
No.
You know.
Well, it was proven. I mean, it was absolutely proven.
Absolutely. And then he ruined that guy's life up there. Mm-hmm. And the guy sued. And
yeah. Well,
but he still keeps. I mean, he's in the White House.
Yeah,
he's in the White House. So I know. You know, we go on and on and on. I mean,
how does that happen? How does someone not step away from that?
That's why I'm telling you, it's so broke it can't be fixed. You got to drop out of sight, Joe.
What are we going to do?
I don't know.
Alaska? Is that the move?
I don't think that's
Alaska.
It.
I'm thinking Anchorage.
I don't know.
I like it up there.
Hawaii.
Hawaii is too dangerous. The sharks, the waves, the fucking storms.
I don't know where you go anymore.
I don't know either, but I don't want to be
somewhere.
I don't want to be in the middle of the ocean. It's just too dangerous. Although it has been there for thousands of years, and I won't be here for thousands of years. So it's tempting
man.
In that regard.
We're doomed. We are doomed.
I don't know. I like where people are. I'm thinking Montana. That might be a good spot. They don't give a fuck.
There's not many people.
They don't give a fuck.
Who's it? Rich Hall lives there.
Does he?
Yeah. Montana, absolutely. Harris Pete and Rich Hall.
Oh, that's right. Harris Pete used to take care of his place, right?
They live up there, yeah.
Harris
Pete
lives
with them? Because I filmed something up there. No, they don't live together, no.
How could Harris Pete, yeah. I was like, how could Rich Hall get along with Harris Pete?
I was up there. It's a strange place.
Yeah.
You know? Not a bad place. Just not for me. I'm not one of them guys. I'm not an outdoor guy. I can't.
You're not an outdoor guy?
I can't do anything. I'm not. I can't change a light bulb.
I like how you're moving your hands around.
I can't have a light bulb. I got to call the guy downstairs. Could you change the bulb?
Yeah.
I got to live in a doorman building. I don't know.
A doorman building.
Could that's you your, fix this?
That's your environment, your natural habitat.
I don't know anything. I got to tip somebody.
Your natural habitat's a doorman building. That's fucking hilarious.
I'll tip somebody to do it.
So you're making spaghetti sauce now. I ate it last night, and I had it today. I just want to tell you, it's very good. It's very good.
Good sauce.
No bullshit. How the fuck did you get involved in making spaghetti sauce?
I had my buddy Joe, right? My mother had passed away a few years ago. He said, let's do something for your mother. Come on, let's do something. You know, he's an entrepreneur kind of guy, you know. And so we got the recipe. And now my wife runs marathon. She's healthy. She eats organic, blah, blah, blah. We made it organic. It took a while. We had to throw out a lot of sauce and give it to shelters and stuff like that because it was too loose and it was, you know, not bad. It just wasn't what Perfect. We wanted. We got it. It's organic, gluten-free, non-GMO, Uncle Steve's. You go to UncleStevesNY.com. We sell it. We just got it here in Albertsons, Vons, Pavilion. We're in Whole Foods, Fairway, all over the country. We're in 3,000 stores.
There it is, right here, Uncle Steve's.
And you tasted
it. I ate it. I ate it this morning.
If you didn't know it came out of a jar, and I'm not lying, I don't eat jar sauce. You know, that's that whole Italian thing. Mm-hmm. Oh, I could never. And I never did, just because I never did. My wife would cook, you know, when I was a kid, my mother, my grandmother. And the sauce is that good.
It's very good.
My wife hasn't made sauce in a long time.
Yeah, I ate it last night, like I said, and I ate it this morning. I ate some this morning.
I'll send you more. We got three kinds.
I got six cases. You sent me six cases.
Marinara, tomato basil. Did you try the arrabbiata yet?
No, I've only tried the marinara.
The arrabbiata is very spicy. Very. If you like it. That's the biggest seller, but it's hot.
Keep it away from the kids.
Yeah, oh yeah. No.
It's that spicy?
It's spicy.
Wow.
It's good spice. People like it. My kids are 20, 24. They like it.
They can handle it.
But not for me. Wow. It's too hot for me.
You
but,
don't like spicy sauce?
No, no.
Really? Not a spicy guy?
Nah.
No?
So, you know, so we're doing good with it. I mean, fuck.
That's amazing.
You know, I mean, that way we don't have to go sit in, I don't have to sit in a waiting room and audition for bullshit. You know what I mean?
It's always a good idea to have alternate sources of income.
I think, you know, you don't remember this. Well, you auditioned for something. It was a movie. Not the same role, but it was a movie. And the guy, Dave Sheridan, you know, comic.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we were there, and I said to you, who's that fucking guy? And you went, I don't know who the fuck. He was the star of the movie, and he heard us.
I've talked about I got that movie. I did that
movie.
Oh,
did you?
Yeah. I talked about that story because not you auditioning, but that whole movie story because that kid was talented.
Yeah.
He was funny as shit.
And he was doing okay. I don't know what it is.
Well, that movie was dog shit. And one of the reasons why it was dog shit is because all these executives, because he was funny, and they made him the star of the movie, but he was a nobody as far as, like, people didn't know who he was. They all were telling him what to do. Like, I watched a guy with a fucking Rolex on and expensive cufflinks
and
suspenders, Frank McCluskey, C.I.
That's it. Because I did a movie with the producer. I did his movie before that. I did a movie where we were trying to put a hit on the dog, C-Spot Run. Yeah, me, Paul Savino.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Then I met you. You just happened to be there, and I was there.
Yeah.
And he was across the way from us saying, who's this fucking Dave Sheridan? You know? And as I saw, he was the star, and I didn't know who he was. I didn't get it. I read for an attorney, I think, a part of an attorney.
Well, when I was on the set, like, the kid was really funny. He's really talented. Uh-huh. Like, he's a very funny, like, real slapsticky, big, like, Jim Carrey-style comic actor. And this guy with the Rolex and the cufflinks and the tailored suit and, like, suspenders, super rich guy, right? He's giving him line readings.
Yeah, that's I know who it is.
I mean, he's telling this kid, like, literally, when you come in, I want you to go, what is this?
Oh.
I mean, like, he's acting it out, and he's, like, telling him how to do it. And then he sits there in front of the camera and makes sure the guy does it exactly the way he wants to do it. And you see Dave Sheridan going, what the fuck is this shit? I can't believe I got to do this. Because the kid was naturally funny. And when you got someone who's funny, one of the last thing you want to do is tell them how to be funny. Just leave them the fuck alone.
Well, of course.
Make them feel comfortable.
You're talking
and leave
about
them
somebody with common sense. I mean, what are you?
Well, they just have so much money. They have so much money, and they have so much influence, and they want to make that monkey dance.
But I haven't seen. I don't know if he's working. I don't know. I haven't heard much of him.
I don't know.
But it's just like, how about when
he was a nice guy though.
But was he a good guy?
Real nice guy. I worked with him. I had a great time. He was a real nice guy.
You know, it's just like comics years ago. The guy managers of the club used to tell them how to do their act. What the fuck? I never told a guy ever.
Yeah.
You know, never told a guy, you know, listen, there's certain things like at the Riv you couldn't do. Like, just don't knock the hotel.
Right.
You know, you don't knock the hotel. Don't say the whole, it's a shithole and this and that. Like I hired a guy, he he went on the radio. He was saying, what a shithole. And I, you know, my boss called me and he said, this guy, who's this fucking guy on the radio? And I went, he said, he's gone. Don't bring him back. So I called the guy. He said, why did you do that? I gave you a job.
Yeah.
Now, why the fuck did you do that?
They think they're being cute.
And I don't get it. So you can't come back, you know.
Yeah.
But I never would tell someone, hey, Joe, that joke you did, you know, that's not funny. Don't do that joke, you know. Don't do that. The guys are giving – they were working as a fucking busboy 3 weeks ago. Now they're running a comedy club and they're telling you what to do.
Well,
people
like that, though. They like telling people what to do. They always have.
I understand that. But, you know, you because you got the job at the club or whatever, now suddenly you're in show business.
Well, you're speaking like logic.
I mean, you know, you're in show business. I mean, you know, how suddenly, you know?
It can't make sense. There's no sense in this town. It's not a sense town. This is not a sense business. This is a business of navigating egos and trying to find your own...
Yeah, but it's nice when you
navigating your own ego.
It's nice when you don't have to, you know, when you don't have to, you know, you're not struggling, and you know, and it's okay, and you can tell a guy to fuck off, and I'm not going to do that, and you know what, fuck you, man, I'm not coming, I'm not working for that money and that thing, and
exactly,
you know.
Fuck
unfortunately,
you money.
Not everybody. I don't have fuck you money. I have fuck money, but you know. The fuck you money is nice, you know, where you don't have to, but it's hard. It's hard to get to that point, man.
It's very hard to get fuck you money. And most people, when they get fuck you money, they're always terrified they're going to lose the fuck you money, so they never say fuck you.
Yeah.
Fuck you money is wasted on the people that are afraid to say fuck you.
Very well said, my friend. Very well said.
It's just so funny knowing you for so long and then seeing you, you know, doing so well now as an actor. And I mean, it's a beautiful thing. It's also beautiful for me because I know that you're not a classically trained actor.
No.
And I've always told people it's not that fucking hard. This is not like a guy who's never done it before stepping in and doing brain surgery.
No, of course. But you know, listen, I got the job on The Sopranos. I did everything like opposite because I had been dabbling here and there, right? So then I got the job, and then I worked with a coach, and I still work with a coach now. When I got a big episode on Blue Blood, she comes over the house. It's a Dom, you know Dom's friend, Joanna Bexson, you know her?
No.
She works with a lot of comics.
Okay.
She comes over the house, I go over the lines, we talk about it, blah, blah, blah.
And when
blah.
You do that, do you like, read with her? Does she read along with
you?
Yeah,
what I'll do is, I started learning the lines, you know. Then we'll talk about it. What do you think here? I have my ideas already, you know. She'll give me some notes. Yeah, that's a good idea. It's good to get, even Gandolfini had two different acting coaches. He worked with this girl, Susan, for years. That helped. You get a different perspective. Oh, you know what? I didn't think of that.
Right.
I didn't think that way. Yeah, you're right. So that kind of shit. Now, look, ultimately, you get on the set, you're going to do what you do, and the director's going to, hey, Steve, you know, you shouldn't be so angry there. Whatever, you know, he thinks, and the guy that wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But I worked very hard at it, and I worked for years now. Now, don't forget, I'm making a living for 16 years as an actor. I left the Riviera in 2000.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, 16 years. So, and I've done a lot of shit.
This is you saying that 2000 was 16 years ago makes me go, what?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, I left there. I started on The Sopranos in 99. I went back and forth for a year. You know, I didn't quit. I did six episodes. I was still at the Riv.
What is it like? That must have been fucking strange.
I was still at the Riv, and then I booked it for 10 years. I booked the Riv until 2010. Chris Rock said, you're still dipping your toe in that shit? I said, why not? They're paying me. What the fuck?
How hard is it
to fucking book three comics a week? I could do it in 3 days, book up 6 months.
That's hilarious.
You know, I book guys that, that didn't work much, you know.
Well, I think your point is the really important part of what you're saying is like the getting a different perspective. Where a guy like Gandolfini, you'd imagine he was so good, you would imagine that he probably looked at it from all sorts of different angles.
Yeah, yes, he did, and you saw a lot of different colors.
Yeah.
But he would work 16 hours, okay, 16 hour days on The Sopranos. He's there, so. I mean, the guy gets up whatever time he got up. Then he's got to go home and learn tomorrow's stuff. So sometimes he told me he'd be sitting in the chair. He'd fall asleep for 2 hours. He wakes up. She's still there just waiting for him to wake up, and they're going to work on the stuff for tomorrow.
Whoa.
Yeah, and 9 months of that. Don't forget, you know, The Sopranos, Joe, they were – when I got on the show, it was like 8 days. I came on the second season, so it was like 8 days for an episode, then 9, then 10. At the last season, it was – we shot 9 shows in 9 months.
Holy shit.
Yeah. You know, it was like shooting a movie. There's no commercials, so it's a full hour. But, you know, that's what it was, man. It was long. Wow. It was like shooting a movie.
Wow. A month an episode.
The first episode was 17, 18 working days. Lorraine Bracco said to me, you're going to work more in this episode than I will the whole season. Because she only worked one day an episode. You know, she had the greatest job in show business.
Wow.
They shot that in one day.
Oh, that's beautiful for her.
Well, you know.
It was a great part, too.
Yeah, it was great. You know, but I think the coaching-wise, and I think a lot of it is, you know, your focus, your concentrate, know your stuff, know your lines. I mean, you're an actor, you know. Know your shit. Don't come in and be like a smart-ass, maybe I'll paraphrase. Know your stuff. Respect what's on the page. You know, that's, I'm a big believer in that.
Yeah.
On The Sopranos, you didn't ad-lib the word thuh, and I'm not joking. There was a time that I had to say, I gotta go. And the line was, I have to go. And they kept correcting me, because I just, you know, I gotta go. No, I have to go. I don't know why, what, when. I didn't question it.
Right.
You know, I mean, you know, but.
That's a crazy amount of work when you're talking about with Gandolfini. That's still fucking with my head.
Yeah. Now, listen, Jim was one of my closest friends. Couldn't find a better guy. He worked. Harley saw his kids, you know, his kid, you know, his daughter wasn't born, you know, while he was on The Sopranos. But it was like no life. You completely gave up your life. Not the rest of us, because there was so many characters. You know, I had a couple episodes where I worked a real lot, but, you know, otherwise.
It just can't be good for your health.
Well, it was, you know, a lot of guys. I mean, I've read, I think Jimmy Smits I read years ago, NYPD. He said he couldn't take it. It was 18-hour days.
Yeah.
And, he was making a fortune. He said, I couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah. No, I've had friends that have been on dramas before, and it's the same thing. They would tell me that they just couldn't do it. When the season would wrap, they would go, this has got to be my last season. I can't do this anymore.
You know, it's a point with the money. Now, you know, the thing, what I love about Blue Bloods is, there's a lot of characters, so there's different stories. So it's not like that. It's you know, great.
That's nice.
It's a beautiful show, and you know, like you said, the writing's good. You know, network show, but you know, with Jim, but he worked with, you know, a lot of. That's like a dirty secret working with an acting coach.
Is it?
That's a dirty little secret. Some people don't want to admit. I think Pacino works with somebody.
Well, I don't know why that would be a dirty secret. I would think that would be just practice. That would be a good
thing. No, but I think like guys don't want to admit that I'm asking for help. You know, you know how guys are. You know how fucking actors are, you know?
Well, comedians have a thing about that with writers, working with writers. Like a comedian working with a writer, it's like other comedians will shake their head and look down on you.
Really?
Yeah, I don't understand that.
But you write all your own stuff, obviously.
Yes.
Because your stuff is very personal.
Yeah.
Right. But there are guys that it's impossible for them to keep writing new material.
Well, there's guys that are very personal, but they have someone work. Like Kevin Hart has guys that work with him. Like he has ideas, and then he bounces them off these ideas, these ideas off these guys, and then they work on them together. Like he'll brainstorm with guys on his act, which is nothing wrong with it. Chris Rock used to do that.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But then there's guys like, say, a Leno or Rodney, who I was a big Rodney Dangerfield.
Sure.
Everybody, there was comics faxing stuff into him all over the place, you know.
Yeah.
Leno, I mean, he was doing the show. He's busy. They're writing his monologue. They're writing his stuff.
But not his stand-up. Like, when Leno does his stand-up is pretty much all Leno.
It's all him?
Yeah,
okay.
but Rodney, for sure. And there was a lot of guys.
I think Bob Hope had 5, 6, 7, 8. He had a staff of writers. I know one of them, he would pay $50 a joke.
And you know, he only tipped 30 cents.
30 cents, but he would pay $50 a joke.
A motherfucker.
He's one of the richest guys ever, that fucking Bob Hope.
He was.
But he would ask for, you know, I need whatever the event was. You know, I need jokes about Trump or mother-in-law or this or that or this. You know, I guess comics don't want to admit to it. But there are comics that buy, no?
There's,
not anymore?
Yes. You know, there definitely are. And there's nothing wrong with it. Like, well, first of all, Richard Pryor, who's the greatest of all time, Paul Mooney wrote for him forever.
Yeah.
And other guys wrote for him. And like I said, Chris Rock, who's also one of the greatest of all time. Chris Rock had a bunch of writers. And
he's just
smart. He knows how to make the best comedy. And it's not necessarily always just with your own mind. Like sometimes
I think
it's
also hard. It's not easy for someone else to find your voice.
Right.
So you have to find those guys. And it's not easy because, I can say, hey, man, you know, write me. You know, sometimes, like, when I have to host something. Mm-hmm. Like I hosted this thing on TV. I'm not making believe I'm a stand up. I'm not a stand up comic, nor would I even attempt. But it's more like a monologue.
Right.
You know, even if I have to host a charity event, I have a guy who writes me jokes, but it's like in my voice, shit that I would say. You know what I mean? And you know immediately, and you know.
Well, sometimes it's not a bad idea to have a writer just because you have a couple other guys that you can talk about your set with. You know, because if you're just looking at it yourself, like you were talking about Gandolfini, like having a different perspective. Maybe even they don't write the jokes, but they talk about the jokes that you've written and give their perspective, and that alone will probably help you improve them.
I agree, and I think if you're doing a live show, if you're hosting something, whether it be an award show or whatever, to have a couple guys there, spur of the moment thing, mm-hmm. give you some. Hey, Joe, here's a good line, you know.
No, spur of the moment is very, well, especially a live show, like a talk show or something like that. Very important to have writers.
Do you like doing talk shows?
No.
You don't like it?
No, I don't like it. I like doing this. This is what I like, because there's no format.
Well, when you do a talk show, it's all set up.
Feels
it's
like
a pre-interview,
bullshit.
And I'm going to say this, you're going to say that. And then a lot of times,
I don't want to do it.
A talk show host has the joke, right?
Yeah.
The joke on top mm-hmm. of your joke.
Yeah.
Right? He's already got the retort, right?
Exactly. I just don't, it just seems fake and forced. We'll be right back.
Now you have to sing and dance.
I don't get it.
You know, you have to.
I appreciate.
You have to be a variety show, like the guy, you know. That's the new thing. Right?
I appreciate a guy like Jimmy Fallon who does it well. I think he's great at it. I really appreciate it. I just don't want to do it. I don't want to be a guest. I don't want to watch. I don't want to sit there. I've had friends that do them. I go visit them while they do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I watched Conan the other day. I had a buddy of mine. He was singing a song on Conan. I went to watch. I was like, hey, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
I think it's a dying format. I think it's a format that's like a dinosaur.
Well, I think it is, which is why you see this guy on CBS, James, whatever his name is, he's singing karaoke in the car.
Who?
This guy, James Corden is his name? James Corden. They sing karaoke.
Oh, he's mixing it up? He's doing different stuff?
Him, yeah. And he's got the different
Good
artists. He had Adele. He had this one. They're trying to do different stuff.
Good.
And I think it's become more like that than just to sit down, old-fashioned, you know.
Right.
Because first of all, you know and I know, most actors, whatever, celebrities, they don't have a whole lot to say.
Right.
Some people, like De Niro, if it ain't on the page, this guy is stuck at hello. You say
really?
Hello to him, he's stuck for a fucking answer.
How is that possible?
You know, because he's got to have it on the page, and then he's a wonderful actor, and he could forgive you all this. But if he, you think he's going to come in here and talk to you like this?
I don't know.
Shit, no.
No?
Hell no. You never spoke to him?
No.
My
friend Joey Diaz, you know Joey.
Yeah, he
did a movie with him, yeah.
He enjoyed it?
Yeah, he liked it. It was just an honor. You know, I mean, you're working with arguably the greatest actor of all time,
if not
one of the top five.
But I don't think he's. You ever see him try to do a talk show with
Stubble? I never have.
Well,
it's boring.
Look at some clips.
Well, I think he's an interesting guy. You know, De Niro's a very unusual guy.
I think he's done a lot of crappy stuff, and I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't understand how much money do you need that you just. I know you want to work, and this is what you do for a living, and I get it, but, you know.
Yeah, he's done some shitty movies for sure.
Yeah, like really shitty movies.
Yeah, but I think that he's probably, what was the recent one he did? The Temp? I watched the ad and I just, my whole soul started shaking like I was freezing to death. Like,
yeah, you know, I don't know. I mean, boy, he owns the restaurants. He's got the hotel in Vegas, Nobu. He's got a million restaurants. He's got the, what?
He's old too.
He owns the Tribeca Film Festival.
Yeah, at what point in time what are you going to do with that money when you die? Maybe he just enjoys doing shitty movies.
Well, I don't think he enjoys shitty movies. I think he enjoys doing movies. I'm not to say that there's a whole lot of great roles for
right.
him. Because like you said, he's 70-something years
right.
old. You know, Pacino seems to navigate them better.
Yeah. Well, sort of. He does some shitty fucking movies, too. But I think these guys, you know, they get up in age and the roles, they don't get offered the best roles. And then something comes along and it's not that good, but it's a lot of money. And they go, fuck it. Who cares? And they just do it. And the other thing is a guy like Pacino, he has so much leeway because he can kind of do whatever the fuck he wants.
Yeah.
Same as De Niro. Like, what was that one movie De Niro did recently that was fucking shit? It's the name of that movie. The movie with Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence. It was a big movie, and De Niro played...
American Hustle?
Yes.
Yeah,
he was good in that. So he's still got it. He can still do it and seem like a really dangerous fuck, it's still possible.
Yeah.
It's just he does those roles don't exist that often.
No, it doesn't. And as you like you said, and as you, I think as you get older too, and as physically, you know, you change. You know, just like a guy that was this wonderful leading man in his 30s, you know, now he's a fucking bloated guy in his 50s. You know what I mean? He can't be the same guy.
Yeah,
you know?
Bloated.
You know, right? But
Val Kilmer, right? Like that kind of thing.
Yeah, I worked with him.
Yeah. How is he?
He was nice, but out there.
He's out there?
I did a movie in Detroit with him. He was way out there. I don't know if he remember.
I heard he likes the mushrooms.
Maybe he was on them that day.
Yeah.
Because we shot a movie out there, and he was way out there. He was heavy then, yeah.
He did something in Africa with somebody, and they said he got whacked out on mushrooms while he was there, running around the campfire, fucking lions in the background.
Oh, yeah, I didn't see that. But he was in Detroit, and he was, you know, nice enough, but...
Well, he was in that movie, The Ghost in the Darkness. Remember that?
No.
No? Michael Douglas and him, they were lion hunting in Africa. They were working on a railroad. It was a fucking great movie. And these two lions teamed up and started killing the railroad workers.
Is it older?
Yeah. It's like, I want to say like 90-ish, early 90s.
Wasn't that his prime? Days, right? When he was Batman? Right?
Yeah, it's a great fucking movie. The Ghost in the Darkness. Him and Michael Douglas.
I gotta look for that.
And Michael Douglas before he got cancer from eating pussy.
Yeah,
remember that?
I don't believe
remember
that.
Remember those days?
You don't? Believe that?
I don't know.
From eating pussy, he's the only guy in the world that I know of.
Well, look, everybody's got to be a first. Yeah, there it is. That's The Ghost in the Darkness. It's a good fucking movie.
That's
man.
When he played Jim Morrison, too.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Right?
Yep. Same era, same time. Yeah. I think that guy got too much pussy, lost his fucking mind, decided to try to eat himself to death, and it just didn't work out. And then he stayed alive and had to lose some weight.
Have him
come
on
back down.
You should have him on the show.
I would love to.
I'm sure you
would love to.
I would imagine he wouldn't. Why wouldn't he come on?
I would have booze everywhere. I would just say, let's just do this. Come on, let's start drinking.
You know what I think he did? One of those autographs. I think he did one of those autograph shows.
Autograph shows?
You know, the autograph shows, they have like Chiller Theater and the Hollywood show where they sell your autographs.
Oh, really?
I think he did one, and he made like a friend of mine told me he made like $100,000. Like he had the line was, you know.
So he just sat down and signed.
Sit down
with
and
people?
Signed. That's what you know. You've heard of these things.
Yeah,
I'm sure you've been offered that.
That never gets to me.
You know. Oh well, that probably gets deflected. But they just had one. They had one in Jersey. You know where they had like Eric Estrada, the other guy from Chips, the other guy. You know, or Good Times.
Yeah.
You know they have the cast, and you know there's guys from my show have done it. I don't want to do it. I've never done it.
Right.
I personally feel it takes a little piece of your soul when they walk by you and go, oh, do I want to buy Eddie Munster's picture or Bobby Bacala? All right, I'll go with Eddie. I think that takes your fucking soul, Joe.
It's gotta take a chunk.
I mean, come on.
Well, I just also think that making people pay for a signature is fucking crazy.
Yeah,
you know?
I'm with you.
I do got to admit, it's a little annoying when you run into those guys at the airport and they got a stack of shit and they want you to sign 10 of them and they want to sell them.
Well, that's not a fan. That's
yeah,
a,
they're
you know
selling
what they're
them.
Doing? They're selling them or they're wholesaling.
Mm-hmm.
To another guy, you know, they just up the ladder. Like maybe he says, all right, Rogan's going to be there. I'll give you $10 for each
Most of the time, I'll just sign one. And this one guy was giving me a hard time. I go, dude, I'm not working for you.
Yeah.
Do you understand I'm working? He's like, I took a train here. I go, dude, I don't give a fuck. I didn't ask you
the
to.
The only thing is, for me, sometimes it's easier just sign the fucking things. I don't
even
want to have the
stack.
Conversation. Yeah.
I'm like, get
just
out of
like
here with
those.
Just
sign the things and move on. You know?
Well, you know, I mean, you could do it real quick, but the whole idea behind it is weird. He's like getting you to do something, then he's going to sell it.
And then they're going to put it on eBay or whatever.
Well, they all have the same standard stuff. They have a microphone they want you to sell. Some of them have an MMA glove they want you to sign.
Okay.
MMA glove they want you to sign. Pictures. It's
I'll
cool.
see
it's
pictures
weird.
And I see pictures and I go, where'd you get that? I don't even have that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
They get them and then they know where you're going to be.
Well, a glove with your signature, that would be worth something, I guess.
Probably like $5. Maybe. Probably cost you more in gas to get to me and get the picture. I ran into a fucking guy once that had fake shit. A guy emailed me and he said, hey, is this your signature? And that was a news radio script with all the cast members. I go, not only is that not my script, all those scripts, all those signatures are fake. All
wow,
Andy Dick's.
That.
Because I knew Andy's signature. He had a very distinct signature. And Phil Hartman had a very clean, distinct signature. I'm like, these are all fake.
Yeah, I saw one. We did this a poster from Cigar Aficionado magazine that was floating around. We all signed them. You know, we used to sign a lot of stuff. At the end of the read-throughs for The Sopranos, they would have a stack of stuff for charity and whatever
right.
to sign. And it's hanging in a restaurant in New York on 50 on 6th Avenue. It's not my signature.
Whoa.
It's hanging up. It's you know, like seven of us. But it's not my signature.
How crazy is that? Yeah, someone's got a fake signature hanging up on a nice restaurant.
Bobby Bacala with a fat, fake stomach. It's from the days when I wore the fat stomach.
Oh, they made you put like a prosthesis
for
on,
two
right?
years, yeah. Then I got fat enough on my own.
Did you get fat enough just so you don't have to wear that
no,
thing?
No, no. One day, Chase, you know, I, you know, when I first got the role, I was seeing all these jokes like your calzone with legs and your fat fuck and your thing. And I'm going, I'm not that much fatter than Gandolfini. I was starting to think that maybe they cast the wrong guy. I'm not joking. I'm saying, could it be? I mean, these jokes don't make sense. And then they call, oh, you got to come in for a fat suit. So I wore this ridiculous thing. Then the second year they made it like a really nice one, like a costume, like a costume shop. It had like tits and everything. And, a costume shop in, like a Broadway costume thing. And then one year I was going back and I was at a fitting for the fourth year, you know, like the next year. And he looked at me and he went, hey, you don't have to wear that anymore. I said, all right. So I'm assuming. It was pretty embarrassing at first. At first I was prancing around. They had an ass on me, too, like a big ass.
They put a fake ass
yeah,
on
and him. He was going, nah, not too big. And I was like going, walking back and forth like
oh,
parading.
Jesus Christ.
It's fucking humiliating. Steve Landisberg, remember the comment? He said to me, did they ask your permission to do that? And I said, no, Steve. He said, I wouldn't have fucking did that. I wouldn't have got the job, you know?
That was a weird time when The Sopranos came out because all of a sudden there was like a lot of fake mob guys, a lot of fake connected guys, well, a lot of fake Italian. You know what I mean?
They're like, still around. I call it GAG, Guinea Actors Guild. GAG.
But you know what I mean? It's like that acting that way became in fashion.
They started. They used to hang around wherever we were. They were around. They were extras. They're still around. But there was, you know, we did an appearance in a casino. We used to do a lot of that stuff, you know. They were everywhere. They were everywhere. They were hoping to get on the show. Hey, come on, you did the show. I could do the show.
I
remember Michael Imperioli one time. We were up in Reno. And there was one of them guys, and he was playing blackjack, and you know, and he said, "Come on, put me on the show. I could do what you do." Michael just went off on him. I've been fucking trying for 20 years, you know, blah blah blah. I've been acting, and you know, him. He hit Michael, and Michael was right. He got really pissed off. This is just one of those fucking goombas, you know. And the guy, I could do what you do, you know.
They're the worst.
Exactly.
There's wannabes, but there's something about Guinea wannabes.
There's a handful out here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, there's plenty.
And the thing here, they congregate together.
Yeah. When they try to, like, clang out, hey, Joe, you're Italian, right? You're Italian, me and you, we're together. What's the last name, Rogan? How come you got Rogan? What's the book?
I kind of try to navigate away from them.
Oh, they're brutal.
Like, well, even in New York, I kind of... That's not my thing. You know?
Well, Sopranos was so good that it almost killed the mob genre. You know,
I think
it was
so.
So
I think
good.
You're right about that. Because you know what? Unless, and I get a lot of scripts, Joe, you know, of that crap. You know, they make these, I call them backyard movies, you know.
Yeah.
You're never going to see them, you know, whatever, they're getting paid. I'm not interested because it's that same thing. I'll fuck you. I'll break your fucking head. You know who I am. You know who my uncle is.
It's like a Dom Herrera sketch.
Absolutely. but it's true. But they write this. And I say, right. How does people give them the money? How do you get the money to make these movies?
Well, I think for a while people were making them just because Sopranos was so popular.
But now, unless you're going to beat Sopranos, Goodfellas, you know, what's the great mob movies? Sopranos,
Goodfellas,
Casino. Raging Bull had mob elements, right? Great movie. What am I missing? There's
got to be a few of them.
You know, some great, you know, great, great mob movies. But now, after The Sopranos, I mean,
you don't see
you know,
anymore.
The Godfather 1,
right,
2, you know, there was some, but you're going to have to beat that. Then they tried. They tried to do some mobby stuff. Ray Donovan's working. That's a good show.
That's a good show. But that's from an Irish perspective.
Yeah.
Well, I think what happened with those movies was, or that show, rather, is it was those you had a movie every week.
Exactly.
So, like, every subject was covered. Betrayal, gambling, it pussy, was funny. Murder.
It was funny.
It was funny.
Funny elements. It was very smart. That was something. You know, I would go, I would be around, and people would go, I don't like that show you're on. I'm Italian. Have you ever seen the show?
Yes.
Have you ever seen the show? No, I haven't seen it. It's like I asked somebody, I don't watch porn. I hate porn. Have you ever seen it? No. Well, then how do you know you don't like it? Or did you see it? Or do you watch it? You know what I mean?
But
they're holding signs up. Hey, well, no porn.
Well, that was a big thing, right? The Italian-American blah, blah, blah society was protesting against it.
How about this story? I wrote a kid's book, Nikki Deuce. Okay? It took place in Brooklyn. And we turned it into a movie for Nickelodeon, you know, which we did. And it's one of Gandolfini's last movies. And I had Michael Imperioli in it and Sirico. And Nickelodeon made the movie. But When I wrote the book, I was doing book signings, and you know, it's about a kid, fish out of water, who goes back to Brooklyn. He grew up in the suburbs, and he winds up with a kid, Italian neighborhood, Bensonhurst in Brooklyn, and he gets into some mischief. I don't even call it trouble, but so this guy kept writing letters and shit, and killing me on the internet, and writing letters to the bookstores ahead of me getting there. You know, like saying that he's, you know, derogatory against Italians, and he's now he's bringing kids into it, and blah, 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 blah. So finally, I get the guy's number, and I call the guy. I swear to you. I say to him, listen, I think his name is Anthony. I said, listen, Anthony, blah, 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 blah. This is the world I know. Like, rappers rap about what they know. This is what I know, you know? And he said to me, I said, you know, what can I do? Tell me what I can do. Let's fix this. I mean, because, you know, you blah, 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 blah. He said, well, you can make a donation to my organization. It was the Italian-American bullshit. I said, you got to be kidding me, and I hung up on it. True story. You tried to shake me down.
Yeah.
And there's a whole bunch of when the movie came out, we got some heat for the Nikki Deuce movie.
Really?
And it's not really about mob. It's,
people just want attention.
I mean, exactly.
They want attention. And
they did that with the Sopranos. But people would say all the time, you know, Joe, yeah, I don't watch the thing. I'm an Italian. You guys talk bad about Italians. No, they didn't. They showed what really was. I thought it was very authentic, you know.
Oh, well, the Sopranos is as authentic as it gets. If you know anybody like that, you know those people exist.
Absolutely.
And to pretend they don't exist is offensive.
Exactly. And I think it was a story that needed to be told. I don't think we're putting Italians down. This is what it is.
Well, it was such a fascinating show because Gandolfini was a bad guy. Like his character,
but
Tony
you're rooted
Soprano.
For him.
Yeah. You're rooted for a bad guy.
A murderer.
Rooted for a murderer who cheated on his wife, stole, robbed, shook people down.
Absolutely.
But he was your guy.
He was, I think, the first, I think, I could be wrong, the first, like, anti-hero that people rooted for on television.
I think you're right. I can't imagine
before
anybody.
That, it was, you know, you root for the guy, you know.
Well, he was a real anti-hero.
You know, he was a murderer.
A con man. I mean, all the above.
They didn't just do it to people in the mob. They did it to people, you know, like on the show. It wasn't just within each other.
Yeah.
They went outside. They were robbing people and busting up, you know, businesses and doing all the stuff that they do.
Yeah,
you
know? It was great.
Show was good.
I it
was very
loved
smart.
It
was a very smart show. And if they put it back on now, they would get higher ratings than some of their shows now.
I bet they would. It was so good. I think a lot of people forgot how good it was, and it also changed a lot. If you go to the first episode was essentially like a slapstick comedy. You remember that?
No, I don't.
You remember Lorraine Brock? Not Lorraine Bracco. Who was the woman that played his wife?
Edie Falco.
Edie Falco had a fucking machine gun, and like the daughter was trying to sneak out.
I haven't seen it in years.
She's outside with a machine gun pointing at her. It was way more slapsticky. It was weird. It was like a comedy.
Well, they shot the show aired in 99, right? I think they shot that like in 98, if I'm not mistaken.
Really?
If I'm not mistaken, in 98, I believe, or 97 even, they go back and then it took 6 months and then they started shooting them. You know, how David Chase did it, he didn't do it like a regular show where you shoot it and then in 3 weeks it's on the air. You know, he put them all in the can. They were finished and locked and, you know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, you finished your whatever it took, 9 months. And then he edited them and blah, 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 blah. And then they aired. You know, it was done a completely different way.
Wow.
You know, also, they would, you know, if they didn't like what you did, I mean, he'd replace you and you never even knew it.
Really?
Yeah, he'd replace you. You know, like I had a scene with a guy and they called back, you know, a month or so later and said, you got to shoot the scene again with a different actor. For whatever reason, whether, you know, the guy didn't do a good job or he looked too young or too old or just didn't fit. He had the capacity to just shoot it again. If a scene didn't work, he'd rewrite the scene, you shoot the scene again, you know, 3 months later.
What's interesting about those kind of shows, too, is that they're so big and so popular that you become that character. Whoever that character is, you become that guy, and you're that guy forever.
Well, that's, of course. I mean, that's part of the deal. That's okay. I had no career before that, so it's not
but
like...
I'm saying, there's some people that have... Like, you've worked since then, and you'll continue to work, but there's some people that were on that show that were really famous when that show was on the air, and they vanished.
Yeah. Well, you're in the, you know, you got... people all over the world watching it. I mean, I've been stopped with people literally from all over the world that have watched the show. It was like a cult hit, like nothing that ever hit before.
Like Big Pussy's Big Pussy for the rest of his fucking life.
Yeah, yeah. You know, but Vinny's also, he embraces that too, you know what I mean?
Right.
He embraces that. For him, it works. And
right.
He's okay. He works. He does his things.
No, he's always going to work. He's a very good actor.
Yeah, and
don't
he's
get
got
me wrong.
His music. He's a musician and stuff. But I hear you. You know, especially the name Big Pussy, that was a big thing. Well, people like to say that.
Yeah, you know? They do like to say that. But also his, the scene in the movie when they kill him. Like the whole way it plays out, it was very intense. It's like, whoa, I can't believe they killed Big Pussy.
Well, that was the big thing.
Spoiler alert.
It was the first time, a regular cast member gets killed.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not killing the guy from Friends. You know?
Exactly.
David Schwimmer ain't getting killed.
Yeah.
You know, one Friday night, oh my God, they killed David Schwimmer. There's five Friends now, you know. So that was a big character that gets killed, and then big characters kept getting killed, which is why guys were worried. I mean, there was a real concern that you were going to get killed off the show. The more material they gave you, the more of a shot you're getting killed. You know?
Yeah. I mean...
You know, and let's not kid ourselves. It's not just, you know, you're out of work. They just put you out of work in the biggest show.
When Gandolfini killed Imperioli. I was like, whoa, holy shit.
Pinched his nose there.
Yeah, like, what the
But you know
fuck?
What? Once you made it into the last season, it was like, hey, listen, you know, we're done, you're paid, however the story ends.
It's probably better.
If I would have got killed early on, I would have felt really shitty, I'll tell you. And saw all the stuff that happened, because, you know.
Right.
You know what I mean? And plus, you know, we started making money towards the middle and the end, you know, not the guys at the beginning weren't making a lot of money.
Well, those shows are hard to make money on, aren't they? Like HBO is...
Nah, they don't worry. You know, HBO pays. And they pay now even better. And the show's off the air 9 years.
Wow.
Now, you know, we wind up, you know, and then there was other money coming in because you had opportunities to do other shit, you know.
Well, that show was also groundbreaking in that it was one of the first shows like that, and now HBO specializes in those kind of shows.
And so does AMC, and so does Showtime.
Yep.
I mean, you know.
Yeah. It all kind of came from The Sopranos.
It's the first time they're hiring, a fat, bald guy. You know, Jim wasn't a leading man. You know? I mean, they wanted, you know, you figure... the good-looking mob guy, you know what I mean?
But he was intense and charismatic, and what a fucking actor he was.
The girls loved him. I mean, you know, we used to joke, you know, they say TV puts 10 pounds on you. I say it takes 50 off you.
Well, he was such an interesting character. He was so intense. And, like, when he got into that murderous rage, like, you fucking bought it hook, line, and sinker.
Absolutely. When you acted with him, you didn't have to... You know, you didn't have to act scared. Like, if it was a scene, I got to be scared, you're going to yell at me. You know, he was fucking, you know, he gave you the whole thing, you know.
Yeah.
When we had that fight, you know, me and him had that fight in the first episode of that last season. I mean, you know, we shot that for a day and a half.
Whoa.
That was tough. He was choking me. He said, listen, you know, let's try to take this as far as we can. And we fucking took it. I was pulling his hair. He was fucking choking me. I was getting cut from the... I was wearing a, you know, necklace, you know. I was getting cut from that. I mean, we were banged up.
Wow.
Banged up, for real. And that's why it looked real. It was like two fat, out of shape guys
fighting the fuck out of each other.
I mean, they don't, you know, guys, it's not Steven Seagal where, right. You know what I mean? You know, look, you know, what the hell? This was like a fight. Like a...
So when you do something like that, like, how hard do you hit each other?
You know, as hard as, you know, you could without really hurting. And he had said that, let's go as far as we could. And we were, you know.
But how do you do that?
He was saying, pull my hair, pull my hair. You know, he's fucking pulling his hair and he's choking me. Go ahead, go further. You know, like I said, we're good friends. You know, if you do it with a stranger, it could get a little funky. You know what I mean? Like, hey, well, you know.
I had a fight scene on the TV once. I accidentally punched a guy in the face. I meant to miss his face, but they threw a drink in my face, and I was supposed to punch him, but I was supposed to, like, punch by him. I hit him right in the jaw.
And he did he go down?
He went, like, you see, but I didn't hit him hard, but I hit him, you know? And, like, you could see the look in his face, like, you weren't supposed to hit me. Like, keep going.
Yeah, yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, I had to apologize, and it was...
Well, was he okay?
Yeah, he was okay, but you could see his... You know, when someone, especially if you're not used to getting hit on the jaw, and you see that dunk, the shock and the sparks... But fight scenes like that, like your fight scene with Gandolfini or, you know, some movies you watch people punch each other and kick each other, like, that guy just hit that guy.
Yeah.
Like that.
Sometimes, you know, and look, I think I know the guys on the show, smack me, really smack me.
Jesus.
You know, they want that, you know, hit me, you know, yeah. you know, I've seen that on a lot of stuff that I've done. And then some guys don't want no part of it, no way, no how, but go ahead, smack me, you know, get the makeup girl and cover it and smack me again, you know, you want that real reaction.
Yeah. No,
it's like
I guess.
Eating on it. I'm a big believer in eating, you know, I know you get sick of eating, but I'll eat that fucking, you know,
in
steak.
The movie.
In a show, in a movie, you know.
So just keep bringing steaks out?
Yeah,
keep
bring
eating?
It out. I'll just keep eating it. And not because I'm a glutton, because I think it looks real.
Yes.
I mean, not the little boy, you know. If you noticed, I'm a little kooky, so I notice shit like that. Look, they didn't really eat that, you know.
Yeah, well, that's the worst is when you see someone who's eating a half-eaten steak, and then the next cut, it's like a quarter-eaten steak, or three-quarters eaten.
You know,
like, where would you put steak back?
You know, it's the worst thing. I don't smoke, and I've never smoked cigarettes, you know. You see people smoking on TV, and they can't smoke.
Well, they don't know what they're doing.
I know, exactly. I wouldn't know.
I don't know how. I mean, what is the difference? I mean, how? What is the difference?
I don't know. Do you don't smoke cigarettes?
No, but what would be the difference?
I mean, I don't know. There's a thing.
Hold it in your hand.
Do you smoke?
I think it's a casual thing. You know, it's like you how comfortable are you with it?
I know, but you see people that aren't. You know, like I've been asked. I said I'll smoke a cigar, which I don't even do that, but I could.
A cigar seems like so unusual that anybody could do it.
Yeah. You know? It's a cigarette. You see people, you go, this guy's not a smoker. You know?
Yeah. No, cigarette smokers do get crazy about that. Well, there's certain things like, here's the one that drives everybody the most nuts. That's a musician. When you see someone fake playing a guitar, someone's really jamming out, and you know they're not really hitting any of the notes. Like, what is he doing?
Don't even
show his fingers, you fuck. Stop it.
Or a guy's trying to cook or something. You know, there's things that you gotta mm-hmm. do your homework. You know?
Yeah, I would imagine the guitar one would probably be like the worst because there's so many complicated movements, and if you're like a person who actually knows how to play and you watch it, you would know that it's fake. Fighting is that way too, though. Like, you watch fight scenes in movies, and like a boxing scene, you know?
Yeah.
Like, Mark Wahlberg, I think, is a very good actor. But that movie, The Fighter, where he played Mickey Ward.
Yeah.
Like, I'm watching him. I'm like, this is a guy that's not getting hit. Like, he's boxing like no one's hitting him back.
And what do you think about, like, the Rocky movies?
Terrible.
The fight
scenes are terrible.
Yeah,
they're terrible.
Yeah.
They're the worst. they're atrocious. There's one movie, one guy, but they're great movies as far as, like, look, when I was a little kid, I saw Rocky, and I drank a fucking raw egg, and I ran around the block. I never run in my life. I mean, unless I was playing baseball or something. I never ran. But that movie made me go running. I wanted to go running. Ta-da, ta-da.
Yeah, I didn't want that whole
excited.
Thing. You know?
So it wasn't that they were bad movies, but when you watch the boxing scenes, you're like, get the fuck out of here.
Well, The Raging Bull, that was good.
That was good.
That was good.
That was good.
That was choreographed down to
was. Well, he recreated essentially what happened with Sugar Ray Robinson and Jake LaMotta.
Uh-huh.
But De Niro was a meticulous motherfucker in those days.
Yeah.
I mean, look the kind of shape he got in for that movie.
Absolutely.
I mean, he looked like LaMotta. I mean, he looked like a real killer.
All those days are over. Yeah. Meticulous.
Those days are over. Now he's doing
and the
anything
temp,
that comes
down
the
to spring break. Spring break. He had no shirt on. It's spring break.
Oh, you know who did the best boxing movie, though? Daniel Day-Lewis. He did that movie, The Boxer. He apparently lived like a boxer for a whole year for that movie.
Although he does that kind of stuff.
Right? Yeah, and you watch him box, though, like he's boxing like a boxer. He's not boxing like a guy.
I didn't see that.
Who won't
Is that what it's
back.
Called, The Boxer?
Yeah, yeah, it's called The Boxer. He plays an IRA guy that gets released from prison and goes back to boxing.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Very good. Very good.
He, a buddy of mine was in the Lincoln movie, and he stayed at Lincoln as Lincoln for all that time.
Oh, yeah. In character.
And he was whittling and thing. And I swear. And then somebody said that he cut his, he sliced his thumb.
Yeah.
And somebody yelled, let there be blood.
Oh, right? Jesus.
And he got annoyed at that.
I'm sure he did.
Because he stays in character the whole time, I guess, unless he had a ex for, you know, to cut. And
that what? Where they...
He is above and beyond. That's
he's a
guy that loses him. Him, Christian Bale, they lose themselves in the characters. A lot of people play, myself included. You know, I'm not going to play an English professor. You know what I mean, Joe?
Yeah.
I play a blue-collar guy, you know, whatever that is. But some guys... And those are two of them. Mm-hmm. They just completely disappear.
Gary Oldman in the
Gary
day.
Gary Oldman,
especially
also.
In the day.
And like, Kevin Spacey used to a little also.
True Romance, when Gary Oldman played the white guy with the dreadlocks, the scar on his face.
Completely. But those are the four that I really, you know, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The four guys that you say.
It's a craft.
You know, when I mean.
To hit that level. Yeah.
It's a whole nother
It's a different
thing,
level.
Man,
it's a know? Different level.
And then you see successful actors play. Literally the same person over and over.
Keanu Reeves? What did you just say?
Yeah. But, you know.
But he's good at it. I'll tell you. I like
him in John Wick.
Sarah
Jessica Parker. She plays the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, that and that and that. And,
yeah.
And that's okay. She's successful and whatever.
Well, yeah. Well, there's a lot of actors, when you go to see the movie, even though they're really good, you want to see them play that character. You know? Like Christopher Walken. I'm looking for him.
I work with him. I work with him twice.
I want him to be that guy.
Yeah, exactly.
I want him to be that guy.
But it's got sometimes it's almost a caricature.
It is a caricature.
Now, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I did. I've worked with him twice. He's a good guy. He's
well, how about Al Pacino? Every movie has to have a rant. There's got to be some way. Every movie he's got some crazy rant where he's got to go on this rant. I mean, it's in the script.
There was an old Letterman clip that I saw. I just saw it like yesterday, the day before, Kevin Spacey doing Pacino to Pacino.
Ah!
Really, look for that. It's really funny. He does the thing, you know.
Oh, that's amazing.
It's really funny.
Well, Kevin Spacey's a bad motherfucker on that Netflix show.
Absolutely.
Have you seen that Netflix show?
No, I don't.
He's very good.
He's
very
a big
good.
Fan, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting that Netflix is doing stuff like that. They're putting out their own original content.
Different business model there. It's a whole different deal, you know what I mean? They're not so worried. I don't know how many people watch or don't watch, but that's a huge show.
What the fuck is it called again? The fuck's the Kevin Spacey?
House of Cards.
Thank you. How can I not remember that?
He doesn't speak. He talks low.
Sometimes. He wants to.
Does he ever jump in?
He'll jump in if he wants to.
He
doesn't give a fuck.
Anything goes.
He doesn't give a fuck. But I just like that they can do that now. They can produce their own content. You know, they can do anything.
Listen, it's the way it's going.
Have you seen that Bill Burr show, F is for Family?
Yeah.
Did Bill ever work for you?
No, but I hosted a thing at the Garden last year, Garden of Dreams. 5,500 people. It's a kids charity. It's a good one. And it was Bill Burr, John Oliver, Lewis Black, Dane Cook, and Billy Gardell. And I met Bill. He's a funny guy.
He's a great guy.
He's funny, and he's a good guy.
He's a real good guy.
He's a good guy. I asked him.
What you see is what you get.
He's a really funny guy. I mean, and you know what? I had seen him on another charity, the Comedy Central, that thing, and that's the first time I had seen him. But he's been around, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Makes me laugh a lot. There's not that many comics that make me laugh.
He's one of the best ever. He's a Boston guy.
Yeah. There's not too many guys.
By the way, he bakes a hell of a pie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's a pie baker. He makes pumpkin pie. It's fucking delicious. Really good. He gets into it. He makes his own crust.
He's got to start selling. Sell him.
Yeah. I'm already going to get in trouble because I'm late.
All right, brother.
I ran this long.
It was great seeing you,
please,
man.
Anytime. Whenever
you're
in town. Let's do this more often. Are you here often?
No, I haven't been because I've been working. I've been doing the Blue Bloods.
When was the last time you were here?
It's been about, I'd say, close to a year.
Anytime, please, let me know.
It's a pleasure.
If I'm in New York, maybe I need to go to New York and just set up shop there in New York and do a bunch of podcasts down there.
That would be good.
It would be.
Got a bunch of guys.
So how do people get your sauce one more time?
UncleStevesNY.com. You could get it also Albertsons. Fairway, Whole Foods, Vons, Pavilions. Go to our website, UncleSteve'sNY.com. You
and
can
it
see
really,
everything.
It really is good sauce.
And like, I know that. That's why I sent it, because I knew, because if you hated it, and that would be fine. I would, you know, if you didn't like it, you could tell me you don't like it, and we wouldn't talk about it.
It's really
but
good.
But there's not one person that told me it's bad.
Beautiful.
All right. Thanks,
Steve Schirripa, ladies and
Great
gentlemen.
Great talking to you, man.
Please.
Thanks, bro.